All right. Welcome, 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 everybody. I am Justin Bader with the Principal Center, and I'm delighted that you are tuning in here on a Sunday night for a special presentation. Now, normally this is our time when we do Ascend Live, our job search show, but I figured this is a time of year when people probably are not actively searching for a job. If you are, keep at it, absolutely. I didn't want to break a whole lot of new ground on the job search at this time of the year, though, because I think we're in a really critical time right now where you have the opportunity to start the year right in terms of getting into classrooms. So say hi if you're here, leave a comment, let me know that you are here, and we will get right into it. And I'm calling this Three Myths That Set Instructional Leaders Up for Failure with Classroom Walkthroughs. And I'm very excited to talk about these three myths because I think they're pretty much everywhere, right? These myths just kind of are the air that we breathe. They're kind of what we inherit as this set of assumptions about how instructional leadership works and how instructional leaders should get into classrooms, what we should do when we get there. And I don't know really where they come from. Nobody is teaching this stuff. It's just, you know, the air we breathe. It's just what we have assumed and have been taught implicitly is the right way to approach classroom walkthroughs. And I think there are just some big mistakes that we're making as a profession that we can avoid. Sherrod is here, Janine is here, Tawani is here. Awesome, awesome. So glad to see some familiar names. Heather is here. Great to see you, Heather. So what we're talking about today is going to be pulled straight from my book, Now We're Talking, 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership. We're going to talk about kind of the first couple of chapters, and this is really kind of the introduction today, because I want to give you the big picture. I want to give you a sense of what's possible if you avoid a couple of very, very common missteps and just get the broad strokes right. I mean, you know, you don't even need a whole ton of detail if you get the big picture right, but I just see so many bad assumptions out there about how classroom walkthroughs work. So I'm very excited to get into this with you a bit today. And I wanted to start with a bit of a question. Hey, Peggy, great to see you here. And this question, if you wouldn't mind, go ahead and leave a comment, leave a message in the chat for me, and just let me know what you think. Why do you ultimately want to get into classrooms? What's the point of getting into classrooms? What do you think will happen if you make a habit of getting into classrooms successfully this year? If you get into classrooms a lot, if you have the impact you want to have, what is that? Why do you think that will make a difference? Because I don't really see much controversy over this idea that as instructional leaders, we belong in classrooms, right? That's where our work is supposedly going to take place. That's where we're going to have an impact. Nobody seems to really disagree with that. I've never had anybody leave a comment on my website or on a social media post and say, I disagree, I think the administrator should stay in the office. Never does anybody say that, right? Nobody really disagrees. But my question is, like, what is our real point of agreement here? How do we think this is supposed to work? How do you have an impact from being in classrooms? Hey, Carlos, great to see you here. Awesome, awesome. I see lots of familiar names and some principals in new roles this year. Let me move this around a bit. Great to see you, sir. Jerry's here from New York City. Sherrod says, I want to set precedents and be visible to teachers and students. Absolutely, right? There's absolutely no downside to being visible, right? We know if you hide out in the office, not great things are going to happen, right? If you disappear, if people say, oh, who's the principal? I thought the assistant principal was the principal. That's a good one, right? I thought she was the principal. You're the principal? So if the habit has been, maybe you're new to a role and maybe your predecessor just was not very visible. You know how powerful it is. You hear the comments people make when they see you, when you're showing up and being places that you know, that really send the message that you're there to learn. You're setting that precedent. Peggy said, hey, Peggy, I want to know what's going on in my school. Shared ownership in learning spaces, positive relationships make the experience better. Oh, these are such good comments. Man, oh, man, no wonder these are familiar names. And I've talked to many of you about these very things. Very exciting to see. Scott's joining us from Tasmania. Great to see you, Scott. And yeah, I hope this Sunday night, this is Sunday night for me, and I know it's kind of mid-morning for people in Australia. I actually had this idea because I'm working with a group of principals in the Adelaide area and wanted to see if others were interested in doing kind of the same thing. All right, Anthony is here. Clearer sense of the strengths and weaknesses, Heather says. Heather's my co-author, so you'll hear more from Heather in the coming weeks. Engagement of staff And students, by the way, if you're just tuning in, here is the question that people are answering. Why do you ultimately want to get into classrooms? Know how people are doing, ensure student success. Awesome, awesome. So lots of good reasons to get into classrooms and almost no bad reasons to get into classrooms, but we do have to be careful about our theory of action, about how it works, and specifically what we do in order to get into classrooms. And there are three big things, I could do this way, three big things that don't really work. And I'm almost certain that you've heard all three of these things either implicitly, either people have suggested them or they've been kind of an assumption, or you might have even heard this explicitly as direct advice to do these things to get into classrooms. And the three, I'm just gonna put them right up on the screen right to start here. Those three things are, number one, just prioritize it and block off time. If you need to get into classrooms, if you wanna make it a priority, just block off time. Give me a yes in the comments if you have heard that particular piece of advice. Have you heard just block off time? If this is important, then you need to prioritize it. You need to put it on your calendar. Have you heard that? Give me a yes in the comments if that's advice you've heard. Second, the second myth we're gonna address today, get a feedback form, make a feedback form, find one on the internet, do whatever, build it in Google Forms, Google Sheets, whatever, and then use that to efficiently email your feedback to teachers. By the way, that's exactly what I did as a principal. Took me a while to figure out what was not working about that, and ultimately, that turned into a book. Now we're talking 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership. It kind of tells the story of how I got away from forms, and I hope to save you a little bit of the learning curve there. Number three, give written feedback with compliments and suggestions, or even just face-to-face feedback. But I think ultimately we want that feedback to be in writing. That's the idea that we internalize. Lots of yeses coming in here. Yes. Yeah, and if you look, I actually had to look when I was writing the book. I actually had to look it up and see, okay, who's teaching about feedback forms and about emailing the teacher the form from Google Sheets? Who's teaching about blocking off time? And the answer in most cases was nobody. There are no authors, there are no experts, there are no researchers who are saying to do this stuff. It's just stuff that is normal in our profession that we have kind of inherited as what we think we're supposed to do. And I was no exception to that. I heard all those same things that you are hearing. But after working on this for more than a decade now, both in my practice as a principal and as an author, here's what I can tell you. If you eliminate those three assumptions and instead say, I'm not going to block off time, I am not going to use forms, and I'm not going to make suggestions, you will be dramatically more successful. And if you have a story to share about any of those points and how that's true, let me know, leave a comment, and other people will benefit from it. I'm gonna get right into the first one because this is the advice I hear all the time. If it matters to you, just block off time. Just say, you know what, this is a priority. I'm not gonna let anything interrupt me or distract me. Tell the office staff, keep people away from me, bar the doors, throw the bolt, and don't let anybody disturb me. And we've all tried this, right? We've all tried to block off time on the calendar and say, this is important, I'm gonna get into classrooms, I just have to block off the time. And I wanna ask you, in your experience, what is difficult about that? Or what are the drawbacks of that? Or what does not work especially well when it comes to blocking off time on your calendar? Leave a comment, let me know. And I bet you're going to share some of the same experiences I had in terms of just the difficulty of blocking off time. It just doesn't work very well in the real world. So leave a comment, let me know. Let's see, yeah, consistency, time is at a premium. There's lots of other stuff to do. Absolutely. Yeah, leave a comment, let me know what doesn't work about just blocking off that that huge, big chunk of time. First thing, it's not as simple as that, is it? Let's see, changing priorities. Yeah, sometimes getting into class, this might seem a little bit controversial, but sometimes getting into classrooms does not need to be your main priority. Sometimes something more important comes up. And if you feel guilty about addressing that more important, more urgent thing, my advice to you is don't feel guilty. You've gotta do what you've gotta do. And sometimes that means not getting into classrooms. But over and over again, if you've blocked off that one time, and that happens to be the time when the emergencies keep coming up, we're gonna be in trouble here. And let's see. Yeah, Heather says, realistically, I'd never have that much uninterrupted time. Absolutely. Do you ever go 2 hours without anybody needing you for anything? I probably never did. Pretty rare for that to happen. Yeah. Nicole says, inevitable that somebody needs you. Absolutely. And sometimes needs is in quotes. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, always some sort of emergency that happens during that block time. I like to think of that, Sherrod, as kind of an example of Murphy's Law, right? If anything's going to go wrong, it's going to go wrong at the worst possible time, which is like when I want to get into classrooms, right? And, you know, the reality is it's very unlikely that anybody is going to get through 2 hours without somebody needing you for something. And of course, some of those things can be put off, but some of them can't. So, couple of big things that came to mind in advance for me. One is that there's not really any backup plan here. When you block off a huge amount of time and that's it for the day, that's when you're going to get into classrooms. If anything comes up, that single interruption can ruin your plan and throw you off for the whole day. There's no redundancy or resilience built in to that 1 hour block or that one chunk of time. Second, in terms of the time of day, you always see the same subjects, right? If you have just one big block, you're always going to see, you know, if it's an elementary school, you're probably going to see literacy or math and nothing else, right? If it's a secondary school, you're going to see first period, second period, maybe some a third period, and that's it. And valuable stuff is happening the rest of the day, right? So we've got to give ourselves a little bit more flexibility, you know, to kind of take things as they come, to respond to whatever comes up, including emergencies, including non-emergencies. Yeah, like contact tracing. There's a lot of that going on. Are you doing a lot of COVID contact tracing? Give me a yes or a yep or a thumbs up emoji in the chat if you're doing a lot of that. I know our local school is having to do a ton of that. They're doing a really good job of it, but man, that is a part-time or full-time job in itself. Leave a comment, let me know if that's taking up a lot of your time. And yeah, reprioritizing as problems arise. I don't want to be in the position of saying that classroom walkthroughs should always be your number one priority, because the reality is sometimes you've got to do contact tracing, sometimes you've got to meet with the fire department. There are important things that you have got to deal with. Yeah, lots of people dealing with that right now. So let me give you a different schedule, and feel free to screenshot this. I won't have a ton that I suggest you screenshot, but this one could be a good example to look through later. And I have two versions. I have an elementary version and a secondary version. If you're at the elementary level and every teacher has kind of a different schedule, you can just look at your own schedule for things like recess duty, meetings, lunch duty, your own lunch, teacher lunches, you know, look at those big pieces and say, okay, when are some times that I'm already going to be out of the office? When am I going to be headed somewhere anyway? I'm not going to be sitting at my desk for 2 hours, right? Not that that happens anyway. But look at those times when you're already going to be out of the office and say, that is when I'm going to go get into classrooms. If I have to be in the library for a meeting at 10:30, I'm going to leave at 10:15 and pop by a classroom and get one of my walkthroughs done. Those times when you are already out of the office are some of your best times, because they don't interrupt your office work, right? They don't interrupt anything else that is getting done. You just leave a little bit early, or you can also tack a visit on to coming back from something like lunch duty or recess duty or whatever you may be headed to. At the secondary level, you want to think of this, of course, in terms of periods. You can be visible in the hallway between classes during passing period, and I think you absolutely should. Very important to be visible during passing period, and probably necessary from a smooth transition perspective. But then, while you're already out and about, go get into a classroom right at the beginning of the lesson. And often the beginning of the lesson is one of the richest times to visit, because you can figure out what the purpose of the lesson is. You can see if you want to stay a little bit longer. You can, you know, observe how the teacher begins the class period. And you can do the same thing when you're about to go supervise passing period. Catch the end of a lesson and see if you can figure out, what were they doing today? What did they learn? How is the teacher wrapping up the class? Don't feel like the only valuable part of the class is the middle. You do not have to see the whole lesson. You do not have to see just the middle. You can see the beginning, you can see the end. And if you're getting into classrooms frequently, it's going to start to make more sense. But I feel like sometimes we hold ourselves to this impossible standard that says, well, I have to see the second 15 minutes of the class. I'm going to miss the first 15. I'm going to come in the second 15 and try to figure out what's going on and see if the students know what's going on and what the objective is. And like, we have this kind of perfect ideal snapshot. But reality is messier than that, right? We need to be a little bit more flexible. And I would suggest that the beginning and end of the period are great times to visit. You may have a time when you say, okay, I'm going to spend this whole period, maybe third period, I'm going to try to visit three different classrooms during that period, and I'll just get to each of them when I get to them. If I get interrupted, no big deal, because you've got some redundancy built in. So here's what I want to encourage you to do. Overschedule your visits, your time slots for classroom visits, so that you can hit three a day. Three a day is the magic number. I think if you can get into classrooms three times a day, you're right in that sweet spot of enough impact without taking so much time out of your day that it's unsustainable. And I see in the comments, I've been to that particular training. I'm not going to call it by name, but I have been to a training where it was suggested that I should get into classrooms two full days a week. And I think that's an admirable goal. I think there's a great ideal there of being in classrooms. There's not necessarily much of a theory of action of like how that works, what you're supposed to do when you get there. But I think it's admirable to help administrators get into classrooms. My question for you is, do you know anybody that works for? Now, I know thousands and thousands of people have been to that particular training. I've been to it myself. I thought there were some really valuable things from it, and I'm not downplaying it. But my question is, does it really work to spend two full days a week in classrooms? Typically, here's what can happen. It can work for a little while. It can work for a couple days. You can sustain it maybe right after the workshop. You can make it happen for a couple weeks, and you can get into classrooms simply by prioritizing it. But long term, I don't think it's sustainable for most people. Now, there's probably one person in your district for whom 2 days a week in classrooms, two full uninterrupted days a week in classrooms, is sustainable. But that person probably is considered the highest performing principal in the district, and they've probably wheedled their way into the most high functioning school in the district. So there's probably one person in your district who can pull this off consistently. But in the real world, for most people, I think it's much more realistic that you're going to end up getting into classrooms something like this. Three visits a day. You might have to try four times, you might have to try six times, you might have to try nine times. But for most people, this is much more doable. Do you think, let me know in the comments, do you think you can get into classrooms three times a day pretty consistently? Just leave me a comment. Let me know what you think in the comments here. Is this something you can do? Can you get into classrooms three times a day? I gotta finish my coffee here before it gets too late. I believe that it is something you can do. And the reason I believe that is because while I do have fantastic clients at the Principal Center, we do have fantastic members in the Instructional Leadership Association, one thing I know is that they're normal people. They are not these people of steel who have just unbelievable systems in place. Like, they're normal people, and we put good systems in place. That certainly makes a difference, but I don't think we should have an approach that's impossible for almost everyone. I don't think we should do something that we say works, that we think is viable, but doesn't turn out to work for hardly anyone. But this three a day, I believe you will find it to be far more doable. So figure out how many time slots you need, figure out when in the day those should be, and you're off to the races as far as a schedule. Now, part of scheduling, you've heard me talk about note cards quite a bit this past week. Part of scheduling is figuring out, when am I going to talk to the teacher? Because it's not enough to simply pop into the classroom. You know, you can make an appearance a few times, but eventually you're gonna want to make sure that you're actually following up with the teacher, having a conversation, having a feedback conversation. And it's really, really helpful to have the teacher's schedule in front of you. So over the past week, I have been urging you and begging you and bribing you with gift card giveaways to please make up a set of classroom visit note cards. This is so easy, and it takes a little bit of time. You might need to put on a movie and do it over the weekend, or have your office staff help you. But it's just a one-time project to set up those note cards, write out the teacher's schedule, so you have their lunch, you have their prep, you have what they're teaching each period, or what time they're teaching all the subjects if you're at the elementary level. And you can look at that card every morning. You can take three cards off the top of the stack, and you can say, okay, these are the three teachers that I'm going to visit today. You can look at their schedule, say, okay, here's when their prep is. I can go visit observe before that, and then come back during their prep, and we can chat for a minute. And simply that tiny amount of planning makes it much more likely that you will follow up. And that makes all the difference in the world. If you've already made your note cards, will you leave a comment and say, I've made my note cards, or say yes or something. And I would love to know if you have made your note cards. If you haven't made your note cards, I'm gonna go ahead and put the link on the screen here. We have a free template And let's see, if you're a member, check your email from last Wednesday. We have a link where we'll actually send you some. We can't write out your teacher schedules for you, but we can actually send you the physical note cards. Here's where you can download the template if you have not already done so, principalcenter.com/notecards, and we will get you going. All right, that brings us to the second myth. We're gonna keep moving here. The second myth, and I definitely internalized this one. I definitely leaned hard into the idea of making a walkthrough form. Have you made a walkthrough form? Yep, you can raise your hand. You can give me a raised hand emoji or a yes. I leaned hard into this, and part of the reason was that I got an iPad. Do you remember when we first got iPads? I'm talking about the very, very first iPad. This coincided with when I was a principal. You might have seen me at the NAESP convention in Seattle 2 years in a row talking about how to use the iPad, how to make forms, how to do all the different things on it. So I was the leading advocate of making forms on your iPad for walkthroughs. And I figured out all the tricks, I figured out all the best ways to do it, and it took me a while. It took me a while to figure out that it's not actually that great a thing to do. So whenever I see people saying, hey, how can I make a form? What's the best way to make a form? How can I fill out a form and have it sent to the teacher? And this is something you can kind of do in Google Forms, but there are some extra steps to make it send to the teacher. It took me a long time to realize that this is not something that teachers appreciate. This is not something that changes teacher practice. The form is convenient for me. It's very helpful for me to have a form because it reminds me what to comment on, what to look for, all those things. It keeps me organized. It keeps my record straight. And I love it. It's wonderful to have a form for my purposes. But then I had to think about the teachers. What is it like as a teacher to get a form that someone filled out about you? Before we can answer that question, I think we've got to ask ourselves, what is it like as a human being to get a form that someone else has filled out about you? And we all have experience with this. Even if you are not an educator, even if you were never a classroom teacher, you have some experience with this. We all do, probably, right? You have the experience of having a form filled out about you, and it's almost certainly not a positive experience, right? I had this happen last summer. I was going down a mountain in Colorado. We were in the Rockies and went over the peak of a mountain and, on the downhill stretch. Sure enough, he was there waiting for me. There were actually three. I thought this was a little unfair, but hey, I was speeding. So there were actually three motorcycle officers just pulling people over one after the other. And I got a form filled out about me. And it was not a lot of fun, right? Now, in this case, there was a penalty attached to it, but in some cases for teachers, there's a penalty attached to it too, right? They have to, reply to us. They have to give us a plan. They have to do lesson plans. They have to take some sort of action. We've got to think about the tone of something in addition to the contents of the message, right? And I think when it comes to forms, there are almost no situations in life where we're happy that someone is filling out a form about us, right? It's just, taxes, speeding tickets, other kinds of taxes, going to the doctor, going to the dentist. We fill out lots of forms or get forms filled out about us in lots of somewhat unpleasant situations. And if we think about whether that changes practice, I have to say, if you think about those situations that change your practice, probably none of them involve someone filling out a form. So yeah, the negative connotations, I think that's it exactly, Kalisha, yeah, absolutely. So what are, for you, some of the things that actually do help you change your practice? What are some times when you have changed your practice? What was it? What helped you change maybe your belief about student a belief about pedagogy, or a belief about students, or a belief about learning, or a practice related to your work as an educator? What is it that actually changes your practice? And I'm gonna be shocked if anybody says somebody filled out a form about me. I'm pretty confident that that's not going to happen. Let me know what you think here as we shift into what we should do instead when it comes to giving up the forms, getting rid of forms to change teacher practice. Aaron says, a conversation with someone seeking to understand. Aaron, I have to ask, have you read my book? Because that's kind of cheating. That's exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly what I say in the book, but thank you for sharing that, for volunteering that. And that's actually what I have right here. People change because of conversations. Even if you think about your personal beliefs about the environment or religion or politics or anything that you hold dear, you've probably formed and changed those beliefs over time because of conversations with people that you trust. And I think the same is true of practice. Okay, see, that's extra validating. Thank you, Aaron. That's extra validating that you have not read my book and you said the same thing. So I appreciate that. Thank you for that, Aaron. Absolutely. People change because of conversations. And it's not the form, it's not the documentation. We've got to do the documentation, but it's really the conversation that makes the difference. So, how do we manage this when it comes to classroom walkthroughs? I believe, first of all, we don't need to take notes right at the beginning. There's absolutely no reason to take notes in your first couple of walkthroughs. Skip it. Just be present and pleasant. That is my tagline for your first time getting into classrooms. The first cycle when you're visiting each teacher, just stop by each teacher's classroom once. Be present and pleasant. And you know what? It'll be fun. It'll be fun for you. It'll be fun for the teachers. It'll be fun for the students. And that means you'll do it again. You'll come back. But if you make yourself fill out this big long form and you give a copy to the teacher and the teacher gets this thing, it's like, oh geez, what is this? It's not gonna be fun. Now, I was speaking in a district, a very large district, a couple years ago, and they said, yeah, we really wanna improve our classroom walkthroughs because the teachers, you know, just are really resisting and administrators are just not getting it done. I said, well, what did you do? I said, well, we made a form, and on the first day of school, we sent principals into classrooms and they filled out the form and gave it to the teacher with a rating. I said, what happened? And they said, well, a lot of teachers cried, a couple teachers quit. I said, that's not surprising, because is this fun? Is this pleasant? Is this really being present on the first day of school to rate your teachers on a 5-point scale for, I don't even remember what they were looking for, but no, it was not fun. It was miserable. It was like pulling teeth for the administrators to do it, and it was just mean to the teachers to be rated on rigor and engagement and teaching point, you know, like all these different things that they were being rated on the first day of school. So don't do that, especially at the beginning. Don't take notes of any kind. If you do take notes, when you start taking notes, send them to the teacher. Send them to the teacher because they don't want to wonder. They don't want to worry. They don't want to think, ooh, what did he think? What did she think? I saw a lot of typing. I saw a lot of writing, but I don't have a copy. What's going in my file? Teachers hate feeling that there's some sort of secret portfolio being built full of evidence against them, right? That's a very scary and threatening feeling. So don't do that. Send your notes to the teacher right away. Just send them an email. Don't worry about any kind of form. Just a plain old email is fine. They don't need a rating, but just send them a normal old email. All right. Now, if you are a member of the Instructional Leadership Association, you've probably been hearing from me lately that we have an app for this. And the purpose of that app is to help you keep track of your observations and figure out who to visit next and keep all your notes in one place. But what the teacher gets is simply an email. And we're doing some development on this. We added some new features. And I thought, you know what, maybe we should add some other fields so that people can collect data and, you know, figure out, you know, patterns and things like that. And then I kicked myself soundly in the shins and said, stop it, no. We are not going to go that route, because what's going to happen if you start filling out a form is that you're going to get less present. You're going to stop paying attention to what's really going on and what you want to share with the teacher, and you're going to focus on filling out the form, right? Forms are kind of like blinders, right? They have a box for everything, but only for certain things, right? They have a box for the things that they want to collect data on, but they really, I think, cause us to kind of miss the whole picture. So when you get into classrooms, look for the whole picture. See what's going on. Pay attention to what's happening with kids and what's happening with the teacher's intentions, and just give feedback on that. And when I say feedback, a lot of what I'm talking about here is simply your notes about what happened, your documentation about what took place. That is all you need. And that brings me to the third myth. The myth that we need to make some sort of suggestion every time we stop by. And this, I think, is a terrible burden that we place on ourselves unnecessarily. We hold ourselves to the standard of every time I get into classrooms, I have to have something helpful to say. I have to have something brilliant. I have to come up with a suggestion for improvement. And of course, I want the teacher to be receptive to that. So I have to come up with some nice things to say as well. I have to come up with some compliments, and I want to, you know, make them receptive to my comments. And we make it so difficult for ourselves that we simply end up not doing it. And I'm going to guess that you have heard this format before, maybe not by this name. Maybe no one has explicitly taught you to give feedback in this way. I certainly got the message that this is how you give feedback, though. You give a compliment, then you give a suggestion for improvement, and then you give another compliment, right? Have you heard that? Let me a yes in the comments if you've heard that feedback sandwich format. I hear this all the time, implicitly, and occasionally people say it outright. Have you heard this? you should give a compliment and then a suggestion and then another compliment. Have you been taught that? Have you been conditioned to do that? Did people do that for you? Getting some yeses? Yeah, very, very common. So there are a couple different problems with the feedback sandwich. One is just, it's a lot to come up with, right? You don't really know everything that's going on in a lesson when you observe. You're not sure what to compliment. You're not always sure what to compliment or what to make suggestions about after 5 or 10 minutes. And if 5 or 10 minutes is all you have, what are you gonna do? Well, don't hold yourself to that expectation to come up with compliments and suggestions. Yeah, the Oreo method. Yeah, absolutely. The feedback, good old feedback sandwich. See, here's the thing. If that worked, it would work outside of the classroom too, right? If you could butter somebody up, give them a compliment, and then tell them something, you know, a hard truth or an opportunity for improvement or some corrective feedback, or hey, you could really be doing better at this, and then you could give them another compliment. If that worked, it would work on your spouse. And if you believe very strongly in the feedback sandwich, if you think this is a great strategy, here's my challenge to you. Here's the $1 million test. Try it on your spouse tonight. Give them a compliment, say, hey, you know, you did a really nice job cleaning up after dinner. That was great. The trash still needs to go out though. So if you could take the trash out, that'd be great. Oh, by the way, you did a really great job cleaning up the countertops too, right? Try that with your spouse and see what kind of reaction you get. See what happens when you give a compliment that is obviously intended to butter someone up, and then you give a suggestion that's obviously what you intended to say, and you know, maybe you didn't even need to say it, but you decided to say it, and then you feel bad about it, so you gave another compliment. Try it, and let me know how it works. Amy is not volunteering to try this out. I do not recommend that you try this out. It doesn't work with your spouse. It might work on your kids, depending on their age. I would not try it on your spouse. I would not try it on your older children, and I would not try it in the classroom. Here's the thing. If this worked, if simply giving people a suggestion was enough to change their practice, then we wouldn't need to do all this other stuff. But people are not really hurting for ideas, right? The internet is full of ideas. Books are full of ideas. Twitter is full of ideas. Facebook is full of ideas. And your main contribution as an instructional leader is not just random suggestions. Hey, have you thought about whatever? You have a whole repertoire of other ways to impact teaching and learning. And I want to ask you, if you were tomorrow to be like suddenly banned from giving suggestions or making any kind of, you know, suggestions for improvement, if you were just not allowed to do that anymore, how would you help your teachers grow? What would you do instead if you were just categorically prohibited from making suggestions? I have to say, I think we'd be okay as a profession. I think instructional leadership would still be firing on all cylinders if suggestions were banned tomorrow. I'm not saying we should do that. I think sometimes it's appropriate to make suggestions. It's nice to compliment people. But if you couldn't, what would you do to help teachers improve? What would be some of your go-tos? What would be some of your methods for helping people improve? I've got a couple here that I'll pop up on the screen for a second for you to think about. Aaron says, ask questions, co-teach. Oh yeah, co-teaching, absolutely. Serving as a conversation partner. Charlotte Danielson says a lot about that. Planning PD to help people. See, you know, part of it is what we need to do to help people develop new skills and to change their practice. Often we need to build capacity, right? It's not just, hey, here's a tip. It's here's an in-depth training. Here are resources. Here is professional development. Here are models for you to follow. People need to let, articles, research, teach. Yeah, modeling, absolutely. Good stuff there. Thank you, Nicole. So there's a lot that needs to happen other than the idea itself. And I think when it comes to the value of getting into classrooms, why getting into classrooms is so powerful, a lot of it comes down to not what we say to other people, not what feedback we give, but what we hear and what we see and what we learn. This is my other kind of writer downer for today. What you learn from your classroom walkthroughs will matter more than what you teach in your classroom walkthroughs. The feedback you give is going to come largely, the value of that is going to come largely through your role as a conversation partner, as a coach, as a sounding board, as a person who asks good questions. It's not the suggestions you give. It's much more about what you learn from being in the classroom. And I think if we think about how instructional leaders ultimately have an impact, and why it's so valuable for you as an instructional leader to get into classrooms and not just delegate that to an instructional coach, right? Lots of schools have instructional coaches. You have people who are supposed to help teachers improve. You have mentors, you have department heads, you have curriculum coaches, you have central office department people who can come and coach teachers in specific content areas. You have literacy specialists. Why is it so important for you as an instructional leader to get into classrooms yourself? Well, I believe it's because you play a critical role. And I call that a set of decisional roles. And I call this decisional information. And here's my definition of instructional leadership. And you'll see why this is so critical that we get into classrooms ourselves. I believe instructional leadership is the practice of making and implementing operational and improvement decisions in the service of student learning. And you'll notice that there are two types of decisions there. Improvement decisions that, you know, are squarely rooted in instruction, but also operational decisions. Sometimes what people need in order to improve is something pretty basic, something pretty operational in nature, something pretty straightforward. Sometimes they don't need suggestions, they don't need ideas, they just need support, they need resources, they need logistics, right? It's like in the in the military, you know, they say, you know, a lot of the success in the military comes down to food, supplies, you know, the supply chains, the logistics. And I think the same is true in a lot of our work. We need to set teachers up for success in terms of the practical things that they need and not always just focus on suggestions. So there are operational things, there are improvement things, and we've got to focus, we've got to make sure that we have the information we need to both make and implement the right decisions in the service of student learning. And at the Principal Center, here's how this all fits together. You'll see that pretty much everything we do fits into one of these three or all three of these key steps in a theory of action. I believe that when instructional leaders get into classrooms every single day, we make a habit of it, we get into classrooms three times a day, you can have feedback conversations that lead people to change their practice, but that also change your understanding of what needs to happen, of where people are, of what the next steps are. So those conversations go both ways. They do change practice, they change the individual teacher's practice, and they help you more effectively change other teachers' practice. And that tells you where your best opportunities for student learning are. Now, in order to make this really work, in order to make this impactful, I believe that we've got to get into classrooms a lot. We've got to get into classrooms frequently. And typically, actually, before I even share that plan, I want to give you the I try to get into classrooms plan. Now, have you ever tried to get into classrooms? Probably so. I have. You have. We all have tried to get into classrooms. And that usually goes something like this. We do our required formal observations. We say, I'm not going to be one of those principals who skips the formal observations and just has the teacher sign the form. I'm going to do all of my formal observations and I'm going to do walkthroughs. I'm going to get into classrooms as much as I can. We're going to try to get into classrooms every day, but you know, stuff comes up. Even if you block out time, it's going to get interrupted. And the norm is that typically if you try to get into classrooms, you've got the air quotes here. If you try to get into classrooms, typically I found that for me, trying got me into classrooms once or twice a week, right? Go visit, get interrupted, try again a couple days later, and typically it's once or twice a week. Has that been your experience, that when you try to get into classrooms, it ends up being once or twice a week? Let me know if that's been your experience or the experience. Maybe think about your experience as a teacher as well. Did your administrators get into your classroom on a consistent basis, or did it end up being something like one or two times a year, right? You're in the minority if you had more than, I would say, two walkthroughs a year from your administrators. But I'm curious what your answer is. I've been asking this question for many years and it hasn't changed much. And I'd love to know what your experience was. Did you get observed more than that on an informal basis as a teacher? Let me know if it was different. But here's the plan that I want to share with you here. If you get into classrooms three times a day, 5, 10, 15 minutes each, doesn't take more than 30 or 45 minutes total per day. So we're not talking about all day, we're not even talking about a whole hour, 5, 10, 15 minutes. Have a brief conversation, send your notes to the teacher if you took notes. You don't have to take notes, just get into the classroom, talk with the teacher. And if you do three a day, that's 30 visits every 10 days, which is 2 weeks, which means about every 2 weeks, you're gonna get around to everyone you supervise. Now, if you share evaluation duties with another administrator, only visit the teachers that you supervise, and then that'll keep the total number manageable, and that'll keep the rotation a lot shorter. But about every 2 weeks, you should get around to every teacher. And if you do that, 36-week school year, every 2 weeks you're visiting every teacher. That means you're getting around to every teacher 18 times a year. Erin says for her it was less than 4 a year. Nicole says, I wish I've been visited more than that. Yeah, has anybody ever had their administrators visit 18 times in a year? Right? You'd probably think somebody was after you if that happened, right? And we'll talk about a way to make sure that people don't think you're targeting them, make people enjoy this and feel good about it. Nobody does this. Nobody does this with the I try plan, but you can because you'll have a different plan. The other thing that you want to do in setting yourself up for success to visit classrooms 500 times a year is you want to have a consistent rotation. You want to keep track of your visits. Make sure you're visiting teachers in the same order every time. If you can't visit somebody, you know, take that note card, put it back on top of the stack for tomorrow. And every day, take those three top note cards off the stack, visit those three teachers, write the date, the date by the period or the time that you visited, and then put that note card on the bottom of the stack. That's all the documentation you need. That's as complicated as your system for keeping track needs to be, just a set of note cards. The link is in the comments, and you can really set yourself up for success. I like personally to cluster those visits by team or department, because sometimes you see different parts of a lesson in different classrooms or just different approaches, and that can be valuable. But whatever order you use, stick to it and visit every teacher over and over again in that same order, and you will be in incredible shape. Now, I want to ask, is this a priority in your district? A lot of districts say, yes, we want our principals to be in classrooms. Your boss has probably said, I want you to be in classrooms. They have probably encouraged you. They might have even ordered you to get into classrooms. But I want to ask you, is it more along the lines of trying or is it working? I'd love to know what the reality is in your school. Jenny says, I was lucky to get one walkthrough a year as a teacher. And usually teachers don't complain too much, right? Because they don't love the walkthroughs. But if you're present and pleasant, it can be a whole different ball game. Yeah, SMART goals around it. Great to hear. Now, I love it when districts prioritize getting into classrooms, but I think we have to be careful. And we have to be careful for a couple reasons. One, there's a lot of evidence that no matter how hard we try, principals do not succeed with this. There's a lot of evidence that even when they're being measured by researchers, principals do not succeed in getting into classrooms. And probably one of the best researchers to follow on this topic, and I follow this topic very closely, is Jason Grissom at Vanderbilt. And he had a study back in 2013 that I cited extensively in my book and in my dissertation that said principals spend about 5.4% of their time on classroom walkthroughs, but only 0.5% of their time coaching teachers. And I thought, that's kind of weird. What are they doing the rest of the time if they're in classroom walkthroughs but not really coaching teachers? Well, Dan Willingham actually wrote an article about this. You can find it on his website. I've got the link here on the slide. And in his write-up of this study, Dan Willingham said, time spent on instructional leadership was not associated with student learning outcomes. Informal classroom walkthroughs, the most common activity, were actually negatively associated with student achievement, especially in high schools. So if your district is prioritizing classroom walkthroughs, we've got to be really careful here. We've got to be careful that we're not trying to get principals to do more of something that's going to backfire. And in a lot of cases, classroom walkthroughs do backfire because they're all about filling out a form. They're all about scoring the teacher and giving the teacher feedback that's really just criticism or really just unsolicited suggestions, unsolicited advice that they don't enjoy, that we don't enjoy as leaders, and then we don't sustain it. So we want to make sure that we're having a positive impact. We want to make sure that if we're going to be really intense about this and really consistent about this, we want to do something that works. If you got my email today, I sent you a link to this entire chapter of Now We're Talking 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership, my book. If you go to the Solution Tree website and search for that book, or it's solutiontree.com/21days, solutiontree.com/21days, that'll take you to it. You can actually read the whole chapter there on the website, and the seven characteristics of classroom walkthroughs that make a difference, that build relationships, that get you the information you need to make effective decisions as an instructional leader and to implement those decisions effectively. Seven characteristics are as follows. Those visits need to be frequent, need to be getting into classrooms every day, three times a day. They need to be brief, so we're not talking about all day. 5, 10, 15 minutes each is all it takes. They need to be substantive, and substantive means that we're not just smiling and waving like you do on the first day of school. We're not just saying, hi, great to see you today, and then leaving. We're actually talking about teaching and learning. But number four, they need to be open-ended. We're talking about whatever's going on in the classroom. We're not just criticizing according to some checklist, right? We're not walking in with predetermined look fors. We are open to what's going on in the lesson. They are evidence-based walkthroughs. We're talking about what actually happened, not what we thought should have happened. Again, it's not just criticism. It's not just, hey, did you think about doing this? Did you think about that? It's based on what did happen. So evidence-based. And then it's also about what our expectations are. So I said, you know, you don't want to go in with look fors, but you do want to go in with a common definition of what good practice is like. And we call that an instructional framework. We've got a whole section on that in the book. And then we want to use that language of that instructional framework in conversation. So the goal here is not to produce a rating. The goal is not to fill out a form. The goal is not for the teacher to get some sort of score and then go cry and then reflect on that and then somehow improve. No, the goal is to be present and pleasant and to have good evidence-based feedback conversations about teaching and learning that not only help the individual teacher reflect and grow, but that help us as instructional leaders have the information we need to make the decisions that we need to make. Does that sound good? Have you done this? Have you tried this and found it to be rewarding? Let me know what your experience has been so far. And if this is new, I want to invite you to try it this year. Frankly, I've given you enough to go on. And again, if you read chapter 2 of the book on the Solution Tree website, there's a lot there that will get you pretty far. I would love to know what your experience has been so far. And if you would like to learn more, here is what we are doing. So if you're a member, you've already got access to this. Here is what we are doing. We are doing a 5-week book study of Now We're Talking 21 Days to High Performance Instructional Leadership. And I'm so excited about this. The good news is you've already got week one. This is week one right now. We are doing the book study. You can start reading the book right now. If you haven't gotten the book yet, maybe you just joined and it's on its way to you, you've got access to the audiobook already. So start listening to that in the car. If you just became a member, we're shipping that out to you right now, and we will be shipping out a whole bunch more tomorrow to anybody who joins us. So I very much look forward to engaging in that book study with you over the next couple of weeks. It's going to be right here on, not on Facebook next time. We're going to be on Zoom for the next 4 weeks because this will be just for members. And here is our schedule. We're going to do chapters 1 through 5 next Sunday. Again, the audiobook is on our website. If you're a member, you've got to log into that. And it's very fast to listen to it. These are not long chapters. Most of them are just 5 or 10 minutes long. So you can listen on your commute, even if your commute is short. September 5th, we're doing chapters 6 through 10. September 12th, the next 5 chapters. And then September 19th, the last 6 chapters. And this is a pretty easy book to get through. This is not a 500-page book. You can get through it very quickly. And the audiobook is ready to go for you on the website. And here is what you get if you join, and you should already have all this stuff if you're already a member. Thank you to all our members who are tuning in here. So we will send you the physical book, and then we'll also give you instant access to the audiobook. And I know time is tight here for our first week, so I want to encourage you to rely on the audiobook for our first session. We will also physically send you the note cards. And if you're already a member, again, check your email from last Wednesday. I gave you a link to request those note cards if you are already a member and you just need a new set. I got a whole case of these note cards. I wish I had taken a picture, but it's like a full double, you know, 2-stack copy paper box full of 5,000 of those note cards. We're sending them out. I will get more if I need to, but I would love to send you some note cards. And of course, you can email our customer service team if you need some. We will send you as many as you need, Carlos, so just reach out and ask. Is the book on the Mighty Networks? No, it's on the member dashboard, Nicole. So if you're in my South Australia group, then it's in Mighty Networks, but otherwise, for most people, it's in your member dashboard. And so we'll give you the note cards. You'll also get instant access to the Instructional Leadership Challenge. If you haven't been through that, that's a great thing to do. But for the next 4 weeks, including today, 5 weeks, we're going to go through the book. You will get access to the Repertoire app, and I will show you how to use that. I'll be developing a lot more templates on that, and I will see you every Sunday night for the next 4 Sundays here at 8 p.m. Central. Of course, we are recording those, so you can watch them anytime. We'll give you the MP3 of the book study sessions as well, and we'll be doing those on Zoom. So if you are not a member, we do have registration open now, and there are a couple of different ways you can do this. If you go to principalcenter.com/join, you can join as an annual member, have your school pay for it, We'll invoice you. You can do a purchase order, have your school pay for it. If you have a group, we do 25% off for groups. We have a lot of people who just registered their admin team and typically their instructional coach. So if you have an instructional coach or an instructional facilitator, an assistant principal, a dean, anybody who is helping improve teaching and learning and is outside of the class, you know, not in the classroom for their primary role. If you have an intern, we can give you the group rate for your intern as well. And your school can pay all at once. And if you are paying out of pocket, if you don't have school funds, or if you're not sure if you're gonna have school funds, you can register at principalcenter.com/join. I think we have it at $19 for the first month, and that will cover the book. So we'll send you the book, and then it's $47 a month after that. So lots of different ways that you can join. We've got lots of people from all over the world who will be participating, and I'd love to know where you're joining us from. I'll ask that next week when we have our first members-only session. But you get all of our stuff, basically, when you become a member. You get the Instructional Leadership Challenge. You get our archive of Ascend Live episodes. You get the Marshall Memo. We have a little course on email called the Inbox Overhaul that can help you get more productive. And by the way, we have a whole section on that. I want to show you what is in the book when it comes to, here, let me find the right chapter here. I'll go to the table of contents. And section two is all about high performance habits, making time to visit classrooms, keeping your communication channels under control, managing the work you're not doing yet, organizing your to-do list, and maximizing your mental energy with habits. All of those topics are not really about instructional leadership, but they're about making instructional leadership possible. So 2 weeks from today, we will be talking about those chapters. And I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. And again, check this out. If you've got the book, this is a great time to go through it again. If you've got the audiobook, maybe you got that from Audible, this is a great time to go through it again. If you'd like to go through it with me, all you've got to do is be a member. You can sign up for $19 at principalcenter.com/join. If you've been a member for a while, I see lots and lots of, who are my members here? Because I recognize a ton of names here. Just say me if you're already a member or if you're pretty sure you are, and we can double check if you're not sure. But who are my members who are with us? I'm curious who is an Instructional Leadership Association member. Let me know. You are not obligated to follow along live. Please do this at a time that works for you. But I wanted to really give you a boost in getting into classrooms, because I know it's been incredibly tough to get into classrooms over the past year. Sometimes you've been not allowed to get into classrooms. Sometimes nobody has been in classrooms because we've been virtual all year or for month after month. Nicole is a member. Bruce is a member. Thanks for being here, Bruce. Heather is a member and a staff member now. So Heather, thank you for joining me in the coming series. Heather's going to be teaching a little bit of this with me. Jill, oh yeah, Jill, I recognize your name. Thanks for joining us. Jenny is a member. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here. Great to hear it. Awesome. Oh, hey, Trelane, great to see you here. So lots and lots of members here. Thank you so much for being here. Even if you don't reread the book right now, even if all you needed was a little bit of a reminder and a little bit of a boost, please take me up on that. Please get in the classrooms this year, because there is no better place to be, right? I truly believe there is no better place to be as an instructional leader than in classrooms. But you don't have to give this perfect feedback. You don't have to always have the answers. You just have to listen. You just have to show up, figure out what's going on, talk to kids, talk to teachers, get a sense of what needs to happen, and you will have that decisional information, right? See, here's the thing that's special about you in the leadership role that you occupy. You make decisions that nobody else has the perspective or the information to make, right? Because you get into classrooms, because you talk to all these people, because you go to the district meetings, because you go to the professional development, you have perspective and you have information and you have a responsibility to make decisions like no one else in your building. So even if you have an instructional coach, don't just delegate that work of getting into classrooms to your instructional coach. Don't just say, you know what, you do it, I'll handle this other stuff, because there's no better place to be. This is the year that you can get into classrooms 500 times. And if I do the math on how many people are getting my emails and how many people are gonna see this on Facebook and Twitter and all the different places, I think we could get into classrooms hundreds of thousands of times or even a million times if we added it all up. Now, not everybody will let me know. I won't find out how many times, but I would like you to let me know how many times you get into classrooms this year. And I want you to shoot for that number of 500 classroom visits. Three a day is all it takes, right? If you get into classrooms 3 times a day for 180 days or 175 or however many school days you have with your virtual days and PD days and things like that, you're going to be in classrooms 500 times if you're consistent. And it's my job, it is literally my job to help you be consistent with that and to help you succeed with that. So I hope to hear from you. I hope you end up in classrooms tomorrow if school is in session tomorrow. And if school is not in session, get yourself ready, get those note cards set up. And if you're not a member, I'd love to have you in our book study for the next couple of weeks. This is gonna be a ton of fun. We're gonna talk about the first 5 chapters next week. And I will see you every Sunday night for the next month. Just very excited to re-engage in this work. You know, it's kind of weird having written the book to just not think about it for a while and then to come back to it and think, oh yeah, this is really exciting to see how this is impacting people's practice. So this is so fun for me to hear what people are doing. I was talking to Eric, one of our members, the other day, and he actually had the book on a little stand, like in front of his desk. So he had his desk, and then across the room, he had this nice table with, you know, like some artwork and different things, and the book was on a stand. And I said, why do you have my book on a stand? That's kind of embarrassing to me, you know, to see that there. And he said, this is my reminder to get into classrooms. And I love that. So whatever you have to, I don't care if the book is in your bag. I don't care if you leave it at home in the bathroom. But what I do care about is that you get into classrooms this year. All right, I've got to run. Again, if you want to join me, the link is principalcenter.com/join. Registration is open now. You can join as a monthly member. You can join as an annual member, have your school pay, or you can join as a group, whatever works for you. And our customer service team, of course, is not in the office right now, but tomorrow they will get you squared away with any invoices or quotes or anything that you need. So principalcenter.com/join. And if you have any questions, you can send me an email. My email is just justin@principalcenter.com, and we will get you going. All right, you've got a big day tomorrow. I've got a big day tomorrow. Let's get to it. Have a good one. Take care. Bye-bye.